From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, lyricists Alan and Marilyn Bergman look back on some of the songs they've written over the past 50 years. They collaborated on Nice and Easy, What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life, The Way We Were, You Must Believe in Spring, The Windmills of Your Mind, How Do You Keep the Music Playing, and all the songs from Yentl. Frank Sinatra, Fred Astaire, Rosemary Clooney, Tony Bennett, and Barbara Streisand are among the many singers who have recorded their songs. Alan Bergman has a new recording in which he sings their songs. It's called Lyrically. Also, book critic Maureen Corrigan reviews Circling My Mother, the new memoir by Mary Gordon. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The lyrics to the songs Nice and Easy, The Way We Were, How Do You Keep the Music Playing, What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life, The Windmills of Your Mind, Where Do You Start, and all the songs from the movie Yentl were written by my guests Alan and Marilyn Bergman. Their songs have won Oscars, Golden Globes, and Grammys, and have been popularized by Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, and Barbara Streisand, to name just a few. The Bergmans are married and have collaborated on songs for over 50 years. Alan Bergman sings some of the many songs they co-wrote on his new album, Lyrically. The Bergmans met through composer Lou Spence. At the time, Marilyn worked for Spence writing lyrics in the morning, and Alan worked for Spence writing lyrics in the afternoon. The three of them collaborated on a song that was written for Frank Sinatra and became the title track of an album he released in 1960.
Let's take it nice and easy. It's gonna be so easy for us to fall in love. Hey, baby, what's your hurry? Relax and don't you worry. We're gonna fall in love. We're on the road to romance, that's safe to say. But let's make all the stops along the way. The problem now, of course, is to simply hold your horses. To rush would be a crime. 'Cause nice and easy does it every time.
How did you come up with the phrase nice and easy, which became the title of the song and Sinatra's album?
Yeah, well, when you write for somebody like Frank Sinatra, who has a definite personality, you try to write, it's easy to write a custom-made suit for him. You know, he's very theatrical. He has a definite character. Mm-hmm. And we felt, because they wanted something that was easy swinging, that nice and easy, the phrase, that nice and easy does it every time, would be good for him.
It also had a kind of subtext of to be a little sexy, which certainly also was part of Sinatra.
This is one of those many songs about sex that isn't literally about sex, but it's absolutely about sex.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
So when Sinatra says on his version of the record toward the end, like the man said, which isn't
yes.
in the lyric. did it no. bother you? Or did you think, hey?
Oh, not at all. No, not at all.
And in fact, we were lucky enough to be there at Capitol Records when he did record this, and he had several different endings.
Oh.
He would ad lib something each time they got to the tag line, and this is the one that they decided to use.
Did Sinatra ever ask you to write for him after having such success with this song?
Yes. Yes, he did several times. There was one time we received a call from him and said, I want you to write me a 10-minute number. And we said, about what? He said, well, you know, boy meets girl, boy gets girl, boy loses girl, and so on. And we said to him, well, that's really been written. He said, you'll figure it out. He used to call us the kids. And he said, you kids, you'll figure it out. And he said, get the frog, which means get Michel Legrand to be the composer. And Michel's father was very sick at the time, and Michel couldn't do it. So we called him and said, is John Williams okay? It was Johnny Williams. He was not the well-known conductor-composer then. And we said, John, would you like to do this? And he said, yeah, let's do it.
So we wrote a 10-minute piece, which incidentally he wanted for his nightclub act. So we wrote a piece that talked about the fact that the protagonist of the piece, in this case the singer, fell in love with the same woman over and over and over. I don't mean literally the same woman, but, you know, the same woman. And each love affair ended badly. And I think I remember the phrase, the same hello, the same goodbye. And when we finished it, we called him and told him that we had finished it, and he asked us if we would come down to Palm Springs, where he had a home, and play it for him. So the three of us drove down to Palm Springs, and we got to his, I started to say house, but more like a compound, actually. And he opened the door himself when we finally made our way to the house. And Alan sang the song for him. Alan, what was that experience? You tell it.
Well, he was sitting on an ottoman in front of me, and I sang for 10 minutes. You know, that's a long time.
You were not sitting on an ottoman
no,
in the Paramount
hardly.
Theater in Brooklyn.
No,
you heard him as a kid.
That's right. When I was finished, he was crying. And he said to Marilyn, how do you know so much about me? As if his life was such...
such a closed book.
Such a closed book, you know. But it must have hit some nerve. And he said, I have to learn this. This is terrific. I love it. And but he never learned it.
And every time we would see him, he would say, I'm going to do that.
I'm going to do that. Don't, you know.
But he never did. But it was a very nice experience, I must say.
Yeah.
Well, Alan Bergman, you've released this new album, Lyrically, of songs that you wrote with your wife, Marilyn. Mm-hmm. Why did you want to make an album of you singing your songs? I think it's the first time you've done that.
Yes, this is the first time. It's not exactly that I wanted. You know, we did a concert. There's a series in New York in the 92nd Street Y called Lyrics and Lyricists. Mm-hmm. And we did that. There was a 25th anniversary, and they asked us to do it again for them, and we did. And a man came up to me after the concert, and from Germany, and he said, I have a record company in Germany, and I think you're a great singer. I want to make an album with you. And I said, I'm not so sure. And he kept after me for 2 or 3 years, and finally I said, okay. Well, I'll do it. And he flew Marilyn and I to Berlin, and he organized a big orchestra and a young arranger who did a wonderful job, Horg Keller, his name is. And I sang live with this orchestra, which was a wonderful experience. I had a wonderful time. I love to sing, so.
Alan has always sung, actually. When we write, we sing as we write, because lyrics, unlike poetry, are meant to be sung. So he's always sung, and most of the time it's Alan who would demonstrate the song for the artist or the producer, director, or whoever was on the receiving end of the song.
Can you diagnose problems in the lyric by singing it?
Oh yes. You know, sometimes the choice of a word you try that word, and it may be the perfect word, but it doesn't sing on those notes.
Can you give me an example of a lyric you changed because singing it, you knew it didn't work?
Mm. I can't give you a lyric of ours. It's an interesting question. But Oscar Hammerstein, probably one of the greatest lyric writers, always felt that a song that he and Richard Rodgers wrote for Oklahoma, a wonderful song called What's the Use of Wondering, never found its way into the repertoire of singers as much as some of the other songs in that show did, because the last line is, and all the rest is talk. And ending a song on the word talk, which you can hear cuts off on that hard K sound, didn't allow a singer to really,
sing it beautifully at the end, you know, and all the rest is talk. I mean, it's so difficult. And that's why it's not part of the repertoire.
My guests are lyricists Alan and Marilyn Bergman. Alan Bergman has a new CD called Lyrically, in which he sings some of their songs. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are lyricists Marilyn and Alan Bergman. Some of their songs include Nice and Easy, The Way We Were, and What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life? Well, let's listen to Alan Bergman sing from his new album, Lyrically. This is What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life, which was written for the 1969 film The Happy Ending. The composer was Michel Legrand. Why don't you tell us the story behind the song before we hear it?
Richard Brooks, who was a wonderful writer and director, directed and wrote this film called The Happy Ending, which I think was well ahead of its time and occasionally will appear on very, very late night television, but really didn't find an audience. Anyway, he came to us one day and said, I want you to write me a song that is to appear twice in the film. Early in the film, I want it to be I want it to function as a perhaps a proposal of marriage between these two young lovers. But I want to hear the song again at the end of the film, at which time the wife, they were since married, 16 years later, the wife has become alcoholic and has left her husband and is in a bar and goes to a jukebox and selects a song and then sits down with a lineup of martinis in front of her. And he's shot this beautiful montage of Gene Simmons, who played the wife, during which time she drifts into kind of a reverie while listening to the same song. And he said, I don't want you to change a note or a word, but I want the song to mean something very different when you hear it the second time. So that was a very interesting, challenging assignment. And Michel Legrand wrote perhaps, I don't know, 6 or 8 tunes as his wont and for this part. And they were all beautiful, but none really struck the three of us as being right. And we said to him, because while he was writing music, we were sitting trying to solve the dramatic question of what the song should be about. We said to him, what happens if the first line of the song is, what do you do in the rest of your life? And he said, oh, I like that. And he put his hands on the keys. And as long as it takes to play that song, that's what he played from beginning to end. And he said, you mean something like that? And we said, no, we mean exactly like that. And Alan said to him, play it again. And he said, Oh, I don't remember quite what I played. Luckily, we had the tape machine going. So we had the music.
So the first line of the song inspired the melody.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
But that happens sometimes. With Michelle, we can't write lyrics first. We prefer not to write lyrics first. We prefer to have the melody. We feel that when we have the melody, that there are words on the tips of those notes, and we have to find them.
Well, let's hear Alan Bergman singing What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life from his new album, Lyrically, featuring songs with lyrics that he and Marilyn Bergman co-wrote.
What are you doing the rest of your life? North and south and east and west of your life. I have only one request of your life, that you spend it all with me. All the seasons and the times of your days, all the nickels and the dimes of your days, let the reasons and the rhymes of your days all begin and end with me. I want to see your face in every kind of light, in fields of dawn and forests of the night. And when you stand before the candles on a cake, oh, let me be the one to hear the silent wish you make. Those tomorrows waiting deep in your eyes.
That's Alan Bergman from his new album, Lyrically, which features him singing songs that he co-wrote with Marilyn Bergman. They're married and longtime lyricist collaborators. Now that song was recently used on a commercial for diamonds. So did you have to give your permission for that?
This is odd. When you write for hire, as we did, What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life? We were hired by the studio to write it. They own the copyright. And they can ask you. They don't have to ask for permission. Most of the time, when they're not changing a word of the lyric, they really don't bother. When there's a change in the lyric, then they do. Then they notify you and ask you if
this
it's...
This was using the Dusty Springfield record of the song. So nothing was changed, and it was a record that had been, you know, it is out. And so I guess they felt there was no need to ask us.
So when you say that the studio owns the copyright, you still get composer credits, right?
Composer
royalties.
Oh, yes. We get credit and we get royalties.
Credits and royalties. But they, in fact... They, meaning the publishing company arm of the studio, mm-hmm. owns the rights to the song.
Now, you've written a lot of songs, or a fair number of songs, for movies. Some of your best-known songs are songs you wrote for movies. You haven't written that much for theater. How did you gravitate to writing songs for movies?
I think maybe movies made a deeper impression growing up, and we always knew that we wanted to write in a dramatic context. We were more interested in that than we were in just writing songs in limbo. Writing for in a narrative or dramatic context, when we were honing craft, you can't write for a picture unless somebody hires you, you know. So it's like an actor not being able to act unless he gets a job or she gets a job. So we would do exercises. We would find either short stories or scenes from plays or articles in the newspaper and pretend that they were assignments. And we wrote many, many, many songs that never saw the light of day, but were exercises that we gave ourselves. So I like to think that when the first job came, we were ready.
You were both writing lyrics for the composer Lou Spence, who wrote the melody for Nice and Easy, which was one of your first hits. And Marilyn, the way you described it, one of you was his morning lyricist and the other was his afternoon lyricist. Mm-hmm. How did he end up having two different lyricists?
Because I like to sleep late.
It was early in our careers, and you know, we were trying to find out who we are, what we're saying, and he was writing.
He was talented.
Yeah.
I did it too.
But did you know each other? He introduced you. Did you know each other yet when you were both writing lyrics separately
No. I was introduced to him by Bob Russell, a wonderful lyric writer who was a mentor of mine, who, when I started to write, introduced me to this composer. And Alan must have met him around in the music business in L.A. But they were not teams of writers so much then. You know, we were all just writing songs, and we worked with him for quite a while, and that was the most successful of the songs that we wrote together.
Okay, so you were writing, you were both independently writing lyrics for Lou Spence. You met
with Lou Spence.
Okay. You met through him, and then you decided that you should be writing lyrics with each other.
Yeah.
So
we wrote a song that day.
Yeah.
The first day we were introduced to each other, we wrote a song. It was a terrible song, but we loved the process. We enjoyed the process, and from that day on, we've been writing together.
Can you share a few bars of the awful song?
Oh my God! Was
I only know the title.
Which was?
I never knew what hit me.
Ouch.
Something like that. Ouch is right.
Marilyn and Alan Bergman will be back in the second half of the show. Alan Bergman's new album is called Lyrically. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Here's the Bergman song, Summer Wishes, Winter Dreams, sung by Abby Lincoln.
Summer wishes, winter dreams, drifting down forgotten streams, songs and faces, smiles and whispers come from far away to
Support for NPR comes from Endless Pools, swimming machines designed for exercise, fitness, and fun. DVD at 888-882-SWIM or endlesspool.com. From the Wallace Foundation, supporting ideas, sharing solutions, expanding opportunities, on the web at wallacefoundation.org. And from Warner Home Video and Netflix, presenting Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, starring Patrick Stewart, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Lawrence Fishburne. Available today on DVD at netflix.com. This is NPR. National Public Radio.
In the heat of the night.
Coming up, more of our conversation with lyricists Alan and Marilyn Bergman. We're listening to one of their songs. And Maureen Corrigan reviews Circling My Mother, a new memoir by Mary Gordon that captures the world of pre-Vatican II Catholicism.
In the heat of I'm feeling motherless somehow. Stars with evil eyes stare from the skies, all mean and bright.
In the heat of the night,
ain't a woman yet been born. Knows how to make the morn call. It's so hard to keep control when I just
of my soul for just a little light.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with lyricists Alan and Marilyn Bergman. Their songs include Nice and Easy, The Way We Were, What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life, You Must Believe in Spring, and How Do You Keep the Music Playing? The Bergmans have been married nearly 50 years and have been collaborating slightly longer. Alan Bergman sings some of their songs on his new album, Lyrically. Alan Bergman, one of the songs you sing on your new album, Lyrically, is a song that you say was an engagement gift to Marilyn Bergman.
Yes.
And the song is That Face, which was first recorded by Fred Astaire. So before we hear you sing it, what's the story behind this song?
Well, Lou Spence, who wrote the music, he was going out with a girl, and Marilyn and I were going out together, and wanted to ask her to marry me and have some kind of engagement. I didn't have any money, so we wrote this song, and we did get it. We got an appointment with Fred Astaire. Fred Astaire was Marilyn's favorite singer. She loved the way he sang.
And still do.
Me too.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, to digress for a second, the literature of the popular music in this country would be much poorer without a Fred Astaire, because all those great writers, Berlin, the Gershwins, Cole Porter, and so they all wrote for him. Yeah, Johnny Mercer. We wangled an appointment with Fred Astaire and sang him the song. He said, before I listened, he said, he owned a record company. He said, I only record what I sing in movies, but I'll listen. He's very sweet. And so we played and sang him the song, and he said, I'm going to record this next week. And he did. And I handed Marilyn this... this record, I said.
And I married him.
And she married me.
Let's hear you sing it from the new Alan Bergman CD, Lyrically.
That face, that face, that wonderful face. It shines, it glows all over the place. Watch it change expression. Each look becomes the prize of my possessions. I love that face, it just isn't fair. You must forgive the way that I stare, but these eyes behold a sight that could replace that face, that face. I see that face.
That's Alan Bergman from his new album, Lyrically, in which he sings lyrics that were co-written with his wife, Marilyn Bergman, with the exception of the song we just heard. That's the only one in which he wrote the lyric himself. When you were growing up in New York, both of you, you both grew up in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if this was happening when you were in high school, but there were a lot of high schools in New York that had something called Sing, in which you had to write lyrics for songs for sketches that were presented at the end of the year. And each class, you know, the freshmen, the sophomores, the seniors, and so on, had their own kind of show that they'd put on. And then, of course, there were summer camps in which people wrote new lyrics to old songs for Color War and stuff like that. Did you ever go through any of that before starting to write lyrics professionally?
I remember the second example. I remember the songs for Color War in camp, as a matter of fact. I don't know. I think maybe I did. But we both had been studying music since we were little. So I never thought of writing lyrics. I never thought of being a songwriter, but until much later, but that's another story. But Alan, did you ever write for these sketches that
Well,
Terry
I wrote,
mentioned?
I started writing when I was about 11 12, what I wanted to do, all I wanted to do was be a songwriter. First piece of sheet music I ever bought was a song called Lost. And one of the writers was Johnny Mercer, who later, about 10 or 12 years later, became my mentor. And spent a lot of time with me, encouraging me and criticizing and so forth. I wrote, I remember the first song I wrote was, the subways in those days. They had somebody called Miss Subways. They had a poster on the subway once a week or once a month, I don't remember. And I wrote a song called I Want to Be Miss Subways, have my picture in all the cars, like the movie stars. That's what I remember about that. But I wrote it. I wrote a couple of shows in high school. And a lot of it, I think some of it was parodies of songs that were there and some original songs. And I wrote in shows in college. Yeah. In those days, I was writing both. I haven't written music in a long time.
So Alan Berg, when Johnny Mercer was your mentor, how were you lucky enough to get to know him?
Well, I met him when I was in graduate school at UCLA, and he heard some things I had written, and he took a liking to me, and he spent over a period of 2 or 3 years. He would call me and say, "I know all you're doing is working." This is before I met Marilyn, and we would go down with his family to Newport, where he had a place. Where he had a house, and we would spend the weekend. He would sit at the piano and listen to me play and sing. He liked the way I sang, and he was just terrific. I mean, I wouldn't be talking to you without him. He was just marvelous to me.
So what was some of the best advice that Johnny Mercer ever gave you about songwriting?
He just outlined the craft about singing. You're writing for an instrument, and you have to respect that. And a lot about imagery. You can do better than that. It wouldn't be specific, really, which was great because that helped. The more specific he would, I think, teachers get, the less you feel free to express yourself. Some of the early songs of mine, you can hear Johnny Mercer in them, trying to emulate him till I found and we found our own voice.
Also, I think what we each learned from mentors that we had was that songs, probably like anything else that one writes, are not written, they're rewritten.
Yeah.
And you can't really get too passionate about any one word or one phrase. And you just have to be free enough and ruthless enough with your work to really keep writing until somebody wrests it away from you, I think.
My guests are lyricists Alan and Marilyn Bergman. Alan Bergman has a new CD called Lyrically, in which he sings some of their songs. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are lyricists Marilyn and Alan Bergman. Some of their songs include Nice and Easy, The Way We Were, and What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life? Marilyn, when you decided that you really wanted to become a lyricist, did you think, well, this is going to be really hard to do because first of all, it's hard to be a lyricist under the best of circumstances, but second of all, there were so few women who were lyricists at the time that you started writing. Did you think this is going to be impossible?
As a woman, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't think it was going to be impossible. I knew that I would be, the odd woman out. I would go to ASCAP meetings, membership meetings, and it would be me and a lot of the widows of songwriters who were there representing their husbands' estates, you know. So in New York, there was Betty Comden and Dorothy Fields, and there were, you know, a couple of famous women writers.
Carolyn Lee.
Yes.
Carolyn Lee, for sure. But she was about the same time. By the time I met Carolyn, I was already a professional writer, as she was, certainly. She was a wonderful writer.
Oh, absolutely. Terrific writer.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
Marilyn, did you have a mentor in the way that Alan had a mentor in Johnny Mercer?
Yes, I did. When I was in high school in New York, I went to the High School of Music and Art. I was a music major. And I was lucky enough to become friendly with a girl named Marilyn Jackson, a very good singer, who unfortunately is no longer with us. But she introduced me to her aunt and uncle, and her uncle was a very successful songwriter, lyric writer, named Bob Russell. He wrote a lot of the Duke Ellington songs, Don't Get Around Much Anymore, Do Nothing Till You Hear From Me. He wrote lyrics to Brazil and Ballerina, and a lot of songs. Very, very gifted. And I used to play the piano for him in the afternoon after school. This was the olden days before tape recorders and stuff like that. So a lyric writer who didn't play the piano used to have somebody sit and play tunes for them. And I became very interested in what he was doing, though I never dreamed that someday that's what I would do. This was just an afternoon exercise for me. And then, if you want the story, I'll give it to you quickly. I fell down a flight of steps and I broke my shoulder and dislocated the other. And so I could no longer live in New York. And I had to come out to California, where my parents had moved while I was in high school, college, I don't remember. And the only person I knew here was Bob Russell, who with his family had moved here in the years since my high school day. I was in college when this happened. And I came out here and in a practically a body cast and looked him up, and we were visiting, and I said, what am I going to do out here for all these months? I don't know anybody, and I can't do anything. And he said, well, why don't you write songs? And I said, I can't play the piano. I can't even turn the pages in a book. He said, so write lyrics. You can dictate them into the now-invented cassette player or reel-to-reel, whatever it was. So I said, oh. And I wrote a lyric, and he introduced me to a young composer named Lou Spence. Now we've come a little circle here, right? And that's how I became Lou Spence's morning lyric writer.
Afternoon
lyric writer, forgive me. And Bob functioned very much the same way that Johnny did with Alan. Bob used to critique what I'd written, and he was a taskmaster, I'm delighted to say. And so I was, I don't think, I, there's no question that I was studying clinical psychology at NYU. Why would I write songs if I hadn't fallen down a flight of steps?
Well, I love stories about catastrophe that have happy endings. So.
That's right.
I'm glad to hear how it worked out. Now, you know, we've been talking about songs you've written for movies. Now, one of your famous songs that hasn't been recorded either by Tony Bennett or Frank Sinatra Or Barbara Streisand is the theme for Maud. I just have to ask you about that. You know, the lyrics are Lady Godiva was a freedom rider. She didn't care if the whole world looked. Joan of Arc with the Lord to guide her. She was a sister who really cooked. Do you look back at that and think, oh, was that dated?
No, I don't know. It fit the author's character. Yeah. Norman Lear asked us to write a piece for her. Norman Lear and Bud Yorkin, who were tandem productions then, asked us to write a theme song for this show.
With a wonderful composer, Dave Grusin.
Yeah. And so this is what we wrote. And it was because she was this ardent feminist creature. So that was fun.
And that's fun because, you know, you have 45 seconds to write something that will capture the audience and tell them a little bit about what they're going to see.
And don't touch that dial.
Right.
So that's how we approach it, you know. Like Good Times, same thing, you know.
What's the lyric you wish you had written? Like the lyric that to you is the lyric that all songs should be measured against.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy. We have a lot of those.
Skylark is one.
Yeah. I've grown accustomed to her face.
That's another one.
Mm-hmm. Another one.
All the Things You Were is another one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They Can't Take That Away From Me.
Yes.
Too Late Now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's...
Sending the Clowns.
Yeah.
Almost anything that Steve
Anything that
Sondheim
writes, yes.
He's the measure right now.
Well, a pleasure to talk with you both. Let's close with another song. I thought we'd close with Where Do You Start, which it was not written for a movie.
That's a good way to close. It closes a relationship.
Yeah. And Where Do You Start? We have, you know, in our process, we have a lot of wonderful composer friends. Dave Grusin is one. You know, besides Michelle and Johnny Mandel, who's a wonderful composer. Sometimes Dave or Johnny will come over to the house and say, "What do you think of this melody?" And they play it, and we usually love it. We say, "Leave it here," you know, and we take it off the shelf and listen to them play, and hopefully get an idea. There are two songs like that in the album. One is Where Do You Start? And the other is Love Like Ours, which just, they're wonderful melodies which we feel we have to write.
And they'll be in a drawer on a cassette or in a shelf. And from time to time when we're not working on something in particular, we'll take it out and play it and see if the muse is in the room. And Where Do You Start is a melody of Johnny Mandel's that we really liked, and it took us a long time before we found an idea for it that we liked. And people have told us that they were married to What Are You Doing the Rest of Your Life, broke up to Where Do You Start, and were divorced the way we were. So, so much for
that's really funny. So how does it make you feel knowing that, like, you're the soundtrack in some way to the ups and downs of so many romantic relationships?
It's very humbling. It's very humbling.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing, you know, that you've stayed together as a couple and as partners for so long. It's sometimes, for so many people, it's so hard to work with a spouse and to work as closely as you have to as lyricists, and to have kept a marriage up for so many years is pretty incredible.
Yeah, we've been writing together for 51 years.
Well, congratulations on not having had to sing The Way We Were in your own lives.
Oh, hardly.
I can't imagine it any other way.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Terry.
Great pleasure, Terry.
Lyricists Marilyn and Alan Bergman. Alan Bergman sings some of their songs on his new album, Lyrically. Here he is singing Where Do You Start?
Where do you start? How do you separate the present from the past? How do you deal with all the things you thought would last? That didn't last. With bits of memories scattered here and there, I look around and don't know where to start. Which books are yours? Which tapes and dreams belong to you? And which are mine? Our lives are tangled like the branches of a vine that intertwine. So many habits that we'll have to break, and yesterdays we'll have to take apart.
Coming up, Maureen Carrigan reviews Mary Gordon's new memoir about her mother. This is Fresh Air. Writer Mary Gordon is celebrated for her spellbinding and tortured explorations of working-class Catholic culture and spirituality in novels such as Final Payments, Spending, and Pearl. With the publication of her 1996 book Shadow Man, Gordon also distinguished herself as a memoirist. Shadow Man was about her elusive father. Now Gordon bookends that accomplishment with her new memoir, Circling My Mother. Book critic Maureen Corrigan has a review.
Mary Gordon's parents were what my own Irish Catholic family would have termed real holy, a dismissive shorthand for holier than thou. Gordon's father, who died when she was 7, was born Jewish and converted to Catholicism. He was so piously gung-ho, she recalls, that he once bloodied his knees at a shrine where the faithful ascended hundreds of steps of a stone staircase, kneeling. He was also, as Gordon revealed in her acclaimed 1996 memoir, The Shadow Man, a sometime pornographer who had been married before, unbeknownst to Gordon's mother. Gordon's mother, who had been crippled as a child by polio, grew up to become a secretary who took her vacations at religious retreats. The couple was introduced by a priest while they were both visiting the same convent. Real holy. It's a world that doesn't exist anymore, this world of pre-Vatican II Catholicism, with its Baroque accessories of confessionals and white handkerchiefs affixed with bobby pins to women's bouffant hairdos. All changed, changed utterly. But one of Gordon's great gifts as a writer is that, like Mary McCarthy and Alice MacDermott, her fellow female Catholic emigres to the literary life, she's able to render the old world whole, capturing its inner logic and viewed from a distance, looniness. In her newest book, a memoir called Circling My Mother, Gordon surveys the life of her mother, Anna Galliano Gordon, who died a few years ago at the age of 94. A weakness of this memoir is that it's shrink-wrapped in a tiresome introductory essay and coda that express Gordon's anxieties about betraying her mother's privacy and also her own writerly despair about ever capturing the truth of her mother in words. It must also be said that the subject here, Gordon's mother, lacks the dramatic duplicity of character that made The Shadow Man such a talked-about memoir. Anna's story is mundanely interesting, what with her surprising middle-aged leaps into marriage, motherhood, and widowhood in quick succession. But what really rivets a reader's attention are the peripheral stories of the priests, friends, workmates, parents, and sisters, especially the sisters, surrounding Gordon's mother. Anna was one of five Galliano girls, born to a towering Irish mother and a short Sicilian father. Of the five sisters, three were fantastically cruel in the outsized way that only the righteous can be cruel. One sister, nicknamed Tiny, ran a camp that Gordon went to the summer after her father died. Gordon recalls herself as pretending to be alive but really dead, in the land of the dead, with my father. Tiny doesn't like that her niece isn't cheerful, isn't with it, isn't grateful for this gift of a summer in the mountains, away from the smelly city sidewalks and heat. So Tiny gets a postcard of the idiotically grinning Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine and tapes it beside the bunk of the bereaved girl. The caption of the postcard reads, "Keep smiling." Gothic moments like these, of a particular working-class Catholic vintage, abound in Gordon's book. On Anna's wedding day, for instance, her father refuses to attend his daughter's wedding to an ex-Jew and slips a note into her hand. It reads, "You will work till the day you die," a note expressing contempt for the breadwinning potential of Anna's intended. A priest, whom the married couple became close to, upbraids Anna for her grief after her husband's death, ordering her to say nothing of your sorrow. Your sorrow is nothing next to mine. You have a child of his loins. I have lost everything. Gordon admits that homoerotic passion may indeed be present in this brutal note, but, and here's the wisdom and rigor of her backward view, she also goes on to say that the priest treasured her father because he was a saintly failure. Success was for Protestants, a sign of mediocre nature, of compromise. This is one thing, Gordon says, that has changed about the Catholic Church. No one of any stripe romanticizes failure anymore. Circling My Mother is a rich memoir, smart about the Catholic world it chronicles, as well as the aberrations and ordinariness of the faithful who once crowded into its pews. No doubt only Gordon would be distressed to hear me say that the circles surrounding her mother are more fascinating to a reader than the woman at the center.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Circling My Mother by Mary Gordon. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Ian Chillog, Patty Leswing, Sam Brigger, and Jonathan Menhivar. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from Barnes & Noble, publishers of the Barnes & Noble Classics edition of Somerset Maugham's novel Of Human Bondage, in stores and online at bn.com. From the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, working to ensure that more students graduate from high school ready for college work and citizenship, gatesfoundation.org. And from audible.com, where you can download and listen to Fresh Air in addition to audiobooks, magazines, and newspapers, audible.com/freshair. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Connie Schultz talks with us about her experiences as the candidate's wife when her husband Sherrod Brown ran for the Senate. And our linguist Jeff Nunberg talks about what he's been hearing in the presidential debates. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.